Hello and welcome to Dear Franny, the podcast of uncommon conversations about love with fascinating people. I'm your host, Francesca Hoagie. Today is a great episode where I talk to Ben Bidwell, aka The Naked Professor. Ben is a mindset and purpose coach, writer, and public speaker who inspires his audience to become their most authentic selves and achieve their deepest potential. Having been on his own journey from a masked toxic man to an awakened and open soul, his story is deeply authentic and relatable. In July 2017, he launched his blog, At The Naked Professor, where he beautifully articulates the importance of mental health and personal development by stripping away the masks of masculinity and embracing his authentic persona in a vulnerable yet captivating way. Ben is absolutely authentic and vulnerable and captivating, and I really loved my conversation with him, and I'm so happy that he's in the world having these conversations about mental health and masculinity and vulnerability, and I'm so happy that he came on the show, and I am very happy to share my conversation with Ben Bidwell. Ben, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm really excited to talk to you.
Thank you very much for having me. Honestly, it's my pleasure to be here.
I found you, I came across you on Instagram, and I was like, the naked professor, what's this about? And actually, are you naked right now?
No, time and a place, Franny, time and a place.
Okay.
It's not my always. And actually, quite a lot of my imagery now, I'm not actually naked, shock horror. You know,
there's actually not much. There is not much nudity on your Instagram these days. But I guess I'm just curious to hear from you sort of how this journey began. How did you become the naked professor?
Wow. Okay. Well, it's quite a long one, so I can spend a lot of time talking about this. So I'll try and condense it into what matters. But I guess starting at the very beginning, I was a very closed off man for the first 30 years of my life, very shut off and ticked a lot of boxes. And I was living this kind of masculine life that I thought was who I was meant to be as a man. And at the age of 30, life began to change with me because I worked with a coach. She sort of rewired my mind and changed how I thought and really changed the person that I was. The next 8 years, I'm now 38, it's been a kind of journey of self-exploration and becoming a different human being, really. And I've gone from being a very shut-off man to a very open book and someone who really embraces my emotions and tries to actually really craves, go searching for deep connection and you know, embracing vulnerability and really wanting to see beneath the surface of other people. And that was all going on just in my personal life, but a couple of years ago, I was running a tech company and I felt very out of control when I was running it. I needed something for my own sanity, I guess, or for my own kind of just mental health, really, that I had something that I could control. So I started writing. I started writing about all my learnings and all my discoveries and my evolution as a man. And I knew that the internet is a noisy place, and I knew that I needed a USP that could kind of have me stand out and really, I looked at what I was writing about, and it was all very vulnerable. It was very open. It was kind of removing the masks, if you like, it was bearing my soul. It was being very raw and, you know, naked in what I'm sharing. I thought to myself, well, why don't I get some imagery that represents that, that can really stand out and really empower my message? So that was the first port of call. I went out and got a load of images that could represent that message and pieced the writing together with the imagery and came up with the name The Naked Professor, and off I went. That was the sort of start of me taking ownership of my life and not needing anyone else to do that with alongside me. It was mine, you know, and I could control it. And then every day since then, my blogs got more and more interesting and my tech company got less and less interesting. And sort of within a few months, really, my tech company was beginning to kind of wind up and everything was going into my blog and working as a coach and a writer and now a public speaker. And it's just been a crazy journey, really.
That is an amazing journey. I guess what at age 30 led you to even hire a coach? I guess you were feeling that dissatisfaction of being that super masculine guy that you thought that you had to be, that I think most men think that they have to be. But I guess what was sort of the turning point at age 30? What was the pain point that made you say, I need to get a coach and start to work on some things?
Well, do you know what? At the time, I didn't realize that I was living sort of unhealthily. You know, I didn't know kind of anything about masculinity. I didn't know that I wasn't living in a healthy masculine space. I didn't know that the lifestyle that I was leading wasn't really fulfilling me. The only one thing I did know is that it felt like there was space for more. But I think I would have kept in that space. I would have stayed there. I was ticking a lot of boxes. You know, there were parties and girls and, you know, money, and everything was kind of right from society's perspective. But fundamentally inside of me, there was this challenge which all revolved around sex, and that was like, I always struggled to orgasm. From the age of 18, the first time I ever had sex, that was how it was. And through my 20s, it was a bit of a laugh, you know. My mates all knew about it, and they would all kind of say, you know, they call it the gift in my 20s. When I was studying at university, I remember saying, you know, most of them had the opposite problem.
Like, right.
Oh, I wish I could have some of that. And it was all kind of part of the fun. But at age 30, things started to change. I started to think, well, actually, I want to have kids one day. And actually, this has been a bit of a negative impact on some of the relationships that I've been in, and it's stopped some relationships even starting. And at 30, I don't really want that showing up in my life anymore. What can I do to change this? It was that fundamentally took me to a coach. And I opened up my eyes to the possibility of working with someone. And then sure enough, a coach started working with my flatmate. And he was a professional rugby player. And he was working with a coach to help him overcome some injuries that he had. I kind of got to the stage where I thought, well, hang on a minute, if he's working with her on his injuries, have I got an injury? You know, is this something that's an injury within me? It was purely that. I was thinking, right, well, let's find out. And I remember speaking with her, saying, what do you reckon is something you can help me with? And she was like, yeah, let's give it a go. Let's give it a crack. We can do this. And that was it. It was all about trying to uncover the challenges I had around sex, really.
That's awesome. So I guess, with your struggle to orgasm that you had in your youth, was it something that was partner only, or was it just sex in general, just orgasm in general?
It was harder with a partner, put it that way. Okay. It was always a challenge. It was something that was showing up throughout my life, and I always kind of felt different to other men in that respect. You know, I'd always be envious. I'd kind of go, so you guys, can you do this and this? And they'd be like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I was always like, God, yeah. But it was heightened. With a partner, it was even harder. On my own, it was possible. It could happen in my own life, but it was always challenging.
I guess so now, I mean, you speak so openly and, you know, beautifully about your struggles like this and mental health and just generally learning to be vulnerable as a man in our culture. And I think, you know, even as a woman, your message resonates with me. But I wonder, in terms of your audience and the people who are hiring you as clients, are they more men who are saying, oh my God, thank God some other man is talking about this? Or are they women who are like, oh, thank God that there are men who struggle with these same feelings? Or is it really both?
It's both, really, to be honest. My message, you know, I'm a man, so my message fundamentally comes from a man's place. I've only been on the journey that I've been on, so a lot of my experiences come from a male perspective. So I think, you know, in many ways, my message speaks more to men, but then there's more women who are open to this stuff. So, you know, it's still a challenge for a man to accept he wants to change, or he wants to grow, or he wants to develop as a person. It seems stronger if they just go, hey, I'm good with how I am, thanks. I don't need to change. You know, I don't need to work with anyone. That's a sign of weakness. Whereas women are much more open. And, you know, we're talking about, my message is a human one, but it just, I guess it comes from a male perspective. So it does speak to men and women, and my clients are men and women, but I really resonate and gravitate most towards working with men in my life, because that's the journey I've been on, you know?
Yeah. And it's great because, you know, just like you said, I think that when women talk to men about vulnerability, and some women do that amazingly well, like, of course, you know, Brené Brown being the queen of vulnerability, and she's obviously touched so many lives, including a lot of men. But I could definitely see, for most men, hearing the message from another man is going to be more powerful. Do you think, like, when you look back on your childhood, do you remember being a little boy and kind of having that moment where you got the message like, oh, I'm not, you know, I'm 5 years old now, I'm not allowed to cry anymore? Or, you know, we see so much of that. I see that with little boys and even people just strangers in public, and I'm like, stop telling that little boy he can't have feelings. He's going to grow up into a man who thinks that the only emotion he's allowed to feel is anger. So do you resonate with that? Do you have any memories of that as a child?
I do. I've done a lot of work around my childhood and stuff, and what always comes up for me is just being at the school gate and being sad on my way to school. Mum was leaving me, and that I was going into school, and you know, initially the first few times, you know, crying because Mum was, you know, saying goodbye, and I was off into this big bad school with all these people I didn't know and teachers telling me what to do. And I remember pretty soon that being sort of shaped, wiped out of me. You know, we don't do that. We're not the boys, you know, we're not that kind of place. Yeah, you know, boys would get on with it, and boys don't, because it was an all-boys school. There weren't any girls, and it was, we don't behave like that. And that's always what comes up most strongly for me. There was always this feeling within me. My mum's a nurse, put it that way. So the nurse's energy for my mum was very much about kindness and empathy and compassion. And I loved that in her. And I definitely felt I had that in me. But I felt like, just like tears, that kindness and compassion and empathy weren't personality traits really for me to embrace if I wanted to grow and thrive as a man. You know, the men I was seeing who were thriving, I grew up in the 80s, well, you know, it was the Arnie's and the Sylvester Stallones, it was the Rambo's and the Terminators.
Totally, you know.
Although they did have their emotional sides, fundamentally what you saw in them was the muscles and the kind of, you know, the macho-ness. They were brave and they were tough and they were strong. And they weren't loving and kind and compassionate. You didn't see that side to them. And they were the men that, for me, that I saw kind of leading the way. If I wanted to thrive in this world as a man, I've got to be more like them. They won't cry. Not out of sadness, anyway.
Well, for sure, part of, I would imagine, that part of what makes you and your message so impactful is that, like, you look like one of those guys.
Well, even there, I say thank you as if it's a compliment. I mean, it shouldn't be.
It is a compliment. Like, you obviously take very good care of your body and you're in great shape as a cis man that looks a certain way, right? So you've got those muscles and, you know, it's awesome. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. You know, I've seen your butt. It's great.
It's there for everyone to see. But you know what? I mean, actually, like, on a really serious point on that, and I really appreciate your words, but you know what? You know, my whole journey into trying to transform my body came from feeling inferior and feeling weak and not feeling very manly. You know, I was a skinny guy growing up. I was very tall and skinny and I didn't like it. I didn't feel like much of a man. And I played this sport, rugby, which I guess the equivalent in America is football, American football. And
yeah, no, rugby, you know, is even more intense. So you guys, you know, wear helmets. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is. And you know, it helps if you're big and strong. It's quite a masculine sport. You know, you've got to be tough and you don't show emotion. You know, if you're crying on the rugby pitch, then, you know, that's a pretty big kind of win for the opposition, really. You know, you're not there to show that kind of emotion. And I transformed my body because I was seeking validation. You know, and I remember when I was 18, spending every day in the gym trying to think, right, I need to be more of a man. That's my problem. You know, I'm not feeling confident because I don't look like the men that I want to be like. Now I kind of, you know, I reveal it all, and it is one of my challenges because people say, well, it's all very well you kind of sharing this from, and you've got, you know, that kind of body, you look after yourself. So it's easy for you to do that. But for a long time, I you know, I hated the way I looked. I was not a man in my eyes, and my insecurities came emotionally, not, you know, they may not be quite there so much how I look now. But emotionally inside of me for a long time, there was a lot of insecurities, and it's that I'm displaying. And my images, I hope, embody that. They may show a person who works out, but underneath it all, there was a very insecure heart there for a long time.
Listen, there are many, many, many people who can relate to that. And, you know, that is the motivation for so many men and, of course, also women, right? Yeah. The insecurity of my body needs to look a certain way, and that's how I'm going to get confidence. And it's actually interesting because I recently, like in the past 4 months, I've lost 30 pounds. Actually, I think like 33 pounds or something. Like, the reason was I was, throughout most of my adult life, I was very fit. I was very thin. I was a person who worked out all the time. It was just a part of my lifestyle. And then around the time I turned 40, I'm 44 now, around the time I turned 40, I just stopped working out. And I just kind of told myself the story of like, oh, it's fine. You know, I'm older now. I don't know. It was some weird thing that I was, that I kind of just had this weird blind spot about. And so over the past 4 years, I had gained like almost like 40 pounds. I wound up going to the doctor earlier in the spring, and the doctor was like, well, not only have you gained this weight, but you're also pre-diabetic. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I let this happen to myself. Like, I'm like, that's not gonna happen. So I went into just, you know, back to exercise, you know, and just eating more reasonably. And I mean, frankly, it wasn't very hard for me to lose this weight because that's how out of balance I was. So it's like, just bring it back into balance. You know, I was able to lose this weight, and now my blood sugar is great and all of that. So that's the most important part. Because I didn't really
really care about the weight, but I did care about, you know, not being diabetic. That part I cared about. But it's interesting. And I'm from New York originally, and I live in LA now. And I just last night got back from New York. I was there for a few days. And, you know, in New York, when you're in the streets and you're walking around and it's summertime, and I'm like, oh my God, I forgot what it's like to have a more thinner body that's more kind of socially like, oh, this is what women should look like. This is a really long story, but just to say that I was really kind of brought back to like being younger and having so much attachment to looking a certain way and wearing certain outfits and getting a certain kind of response. And it was interesting at this age where I'm no longer seeking that kind of approval, but to see that response and have like, you know, men looking at me. It was just interesting. I was like, oh my God, I'm just so glad I'm in a different headspace, because our bodies and the way that people perceive our bodies can really, really, really fuck with our heads, like really majorly be such a big part of your life. So I can relate to what you're saying.
So, I mean, the big change that happened for me, which was just to learn that I was so much more than how I looked, you know, and for a long time, that was what I defined myself as, you know, at 18, I was like, well, it's how I look. And I realized that when I changed how I looked, I still felt the same on the inside. You know, I got little bits of confidence from people making little comments and stuff like that. And I would take those little pockets, but fundamentally, I still felt the same on the inside. And, you know, through all the work I've done, I've had to realize that, you know, all this stuff starts on the inside. It's not the deep, real deep rooted self-love or self-esteem, or however you want to phrase it, comes from, you know, really being with your truth, I think, inside of you. It doesn't come from looking a certain way.
It's so true. I think for myself, I also kind of resisted like the whole self-love deep dive for a long time, because I was like, you know, I had confidence and I was like, I have self-esteem. Like, isn't that the same thing? And, you know, but it was really, it was at the point at which I realized like there's no shortcut around really truly loving myself. That was when my whole life really, really started to change for the better, when I embraced that journey, which is, you know, obviously a lifelong journey. But once you're on that path and moving towards where you want to be in terms of loving yourself, life gets so much better.
If you can learn to love yourself, then the rest falls into place.
Yes. So speaking of love, what is happening in your love life?
Not very much, if I'm honest. do you know, this has been, I could almost track like my personal development journey with my love life as well, you know, because probably in my 20s, I was quite promiscuous. It was kind of where I got a lot of my validation from, and these quick fixes, never having the ability to kind of go beneath the surface. You know, there were lots of girls then, and now kind of as I've gone more and more on my own journey and probably love myself more and more and learned kind of to be more and more at home in my own company, there's been fewer and fewer sort of romantic experiences. And I don't mean that badly, I mean it really positively, and that I don't need to go chasing that anymore. I'm very, very open to letting the right people in my life, but they tend to be kind of very, very meaningful people, or people that there's real possibilities that something can really flourish, rather than just, oh, hey, you know, you're pretty, let's have some fun. So I guess I'm a lot more choosy about who I let into my life. I don't have to go searching for it. But the downside is that I don't have quite so many stories for the guys. You know, they say, what's going on? Are you dating at the moment? I'm like, there's not so much of that going on. I think I've kissed 4 girls this year. There's been a couple I've sort of dated for a while and kind of sort of tested the waters a bit, but it hasn't worked out. And so now I find myself in a place of kind of being very open. I feel very, very open and very ready to meet someone special, but haven't met them yet. So
okay.
Yeah.
All right, so you are open to it. I would imagine that you have so many women who are, how should I put this?
I don't know, tell me.
Well, let's see. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of activity in your DMs. there are probably also women who are hiring you, who have some attraction to you and interest in you. I imagine all those things to be true. Am I right? Or
no, you're, I mean, look, it's, I guess, I'm putting myself out there. So I guess, you know, people do get in touch, you know, it's a nice position to be in. And that, you know, that is one of the nicest things for me in this, is that when you really show up and you really express yourself, then you kind of cut out a lot of the kind of rubbish, because people can see who I am already, and they get a good sense for me because I'm really showing up, and it attracts the right people in my life. I do get some people who message, and it's lovely, it's very flattering, it's hard, you know. You can't, how do you decide who to apply to and who not to? I don't know. I haven't figured that one out yet. It's a really hard challenge because I can't spend all day sifting through messages. You can't, you know, I don't know how people, you know, my account is a small one. I don't know how people with bigger ones manage it, because you want to reply to them, but you can't. So I try and just sort of let life authentically take me. I did meet a girl at one of the talks I did. She messaged after and said she really enjoyed the talk, and we had a really, really nice conversation, and then we met for coffee, and we went on a few dates, which was really nice, because I knew she kind of, you know, I'd stood on stage and I'd kind of bared my soul, and she'd seen so much of me already, and it was nice to kind of get off on that, in that place. But yeah, there hasn't been anyone kind of really sort of, I don't know, that special one, and that's what I'm looking for, you know, it's that special one.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what you deserve. That's what everyone deserves. Oh,
exactly. It's what everyone deserves. Yeah. But you kind of, you know, at 38, I feel like I've come this far. I'm, you know, well, it sounds like I'm only doing this because I'm 38, but, you know, I don't want to settle. I really don't want to settle. I see, I don't want to make this personal, but, you know, I do see people in unfulfilling relationships, and I think perhaps they tick boxes rather than being really kind of immersed in a very deep and open relationship where they really see each other. And I want that for my partner. I want to see them. I want to go to deep places with them, and I want to be vulnerable with them, and I want to go to all those adventures with them. I want to really, really see them, and it's not easy. Not everyone's ready for that. You know, society doesn't teach us to be that way, so there's not everyone's ready for that, I guess.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. That is absolutely true. I do think that what you're doing is really helpful in terms of finding that right partner, that really special connection in the vulnerability that you show, and the fact that you are so authentic, because like you said, it's going to sort out so many people, and it's going to make it so much easier for the right people to spot you and be like, yes, that's the connection. That's the authenticity that I'm looking for. But I guess I have a question about, you talk a lot about masculinity and stripping the mask of, you know, the cultural, more toxic masculinity that we're all indoctrinated with, men and women. And in terms of dating, you know, obviously a lot of those old paradigms are at play, even with people who are otherwise very progressive. People can become very regressive when it comes to dating and their beliefs around it. So I wonder how much that has been an issue, or for you in dating, and women having an expectation that you're going to show up in a more traditional masculine way, and when you are showing up with such vulnerability, like is that freaking them out, or like how has that played out in your romantic life?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, actually, it's really interesting you raise this, because I think it does freak out. I mean, most recently I think it freaked out a girl I was dating, you know, and I think she wanted to go there, you know. She I think she'd learned through her own journey that it was a positive thing to go there, and in her words, to really let herself be seen. But at the same time, it was quite unfamiliar ground for her, and she wasn't quite ready to really step into that space. And it's not an easy space to step into. You know, it requires vulnerability on both sides, and you have to be quite in a quite self-assured space, I think, to be willing to be vulnerable and to really feel trust in that person, to really let yourself be seen. Yeah, as I say, most people aren't ready for it. At the same time, I had an experience earlier on in the year where I probably wasn't quite ready for it, because I wasn't quite sure, and without that certainty myself, I held myself back. I'm conscious of it now, you know, looking back. I held myself back, and I didn't really let myself be fully seen, because I didn't want to jump 2 foot into something I wasn't quite sure about. And I think that is important when it comes to being vulnerable and letting people be seen. It's like you can't just go around being really vulnerable and let yourself be seen to everyone, because sometimes that will drain you. So if you really let yourself be seen and it falls on flat ears and people don't get it, then it's hard, and it can stop you wanting to do it with other people. So you need to choose those people wisely. And yeah, I don't walk around being hugely vulnerable and open with absolutely everybody. If they're not willing to go into that space, then I won't go there with them, because it will drain me. So you have to kind of find out about each other, and it's a beautiful thing, I think, when you meet someone who's on your wavelength. Now you let them see you, and then they let you see them.
Right.
But that's, you know, that's what connection is for me. That's where like something magical happens. Like, wow, like I like saw more of this person than I've ever seen in someone. You know, it's not their boxes, it's not their job, it's not like all these things that, you know, society shows us or we try and show to society. I'm actually seeing the heart and soul. This is something quite different and quite unique.
and so yeah, beautiful.
And so yeah. beautiful when you get there. That is where, that, for me, that's the only way a relationship can flourish.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, but you can't force it on people. It's got to be the right space, the right energy.
Absolutely. I agree with everything you just said. And I think a lot of people, when they hear the word vulnerability, that's what they think it is, just going around and bearing your soul to everyone. And it's like, no. There needs to be a container for that, right? The relationship needs to be an appropriate one for you to share and to be that vulnerable. Otherwise, it's not safe for you, and it's not appropriate for the other person to receive that, right? Like, it's like, oh wait, I just met you. Why? I'm not ready to receive all of your deepest, darkest fears. I agree that you need to be you need to be selective about who you're being vulnerable with. However, I will just say, this is just the love coach in me. just try this on for size. One thing though, when it comes to romantic relationships and you start to feel that fear and you feel like you said, you have this amazing self-awareness that you're like, oh, I was holding myself back. There is a leap that needs to happen in order for us to give ourselves the chance to make sure this person is or isn't the right person for us. And that requires being a little bit more vulnerable sooner than you feel ready. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's one thing I would just, but you know, everything is perfect timing, and you know, the journey of vulnerability, my relationship is one, it's the only relationship I've ever been in that's getting better. Usually, you know, it's the other way around. and it's 100% because we have just gotten to the place where we've resisted being vulnerable with each other. We've just gone there, and it's such a safe space for both of us that it really is a magical thing. I'm like, oh, this is what it's supposed to feel like. Just having this connection with this other person and just knowing, not that it's perfect, because nothing is ever perfect, right? You're still two human beings that have to find like common ground, but it just feels like such a safe space. My heart has never felt so safe. And it's only because I finally was able to be vulnerable and find a partner who could go there with me and not run away from it.
That's so beautiful. It's just like the most wonderful experience, right? To have that, your heart feeling so safe. And I do think that that's a big challenge that so many couples face, is there are so many answered questions because they're not prepared to be vulnerable and really show up, and the other person can sense that things don't quite tie up. It's like, you're behaving that way, but you're telling me this and I can't quite work out, and when I go there you shut me out and you won't let me see it. So now I've got all these questions in my head that are swirling round and round, and I can't work out the answers, and it's heavy and it makes me question your behavior.
It's
all that just unravels if we're willing to just really let ourselves be seen, and vice versa, then that's where the certainty can come. You know, like you say, your heart can feel so safe. That's where things can blossom, right?
Yep, absolutely. But we have to get there, because I was not always able to be this vulnerable. This was a journey. This was definitely a journey.
What opened the doors to you to start embracing vulnerability?
You know, honestly, the real catalyst was becoming a coach. Because when I became a coach and I started working with clients, you know, I mean, and I'm sure you can relate to this as a coach yourself, you know, your clients are, you're a mirror for them, but they're a mirror for you as well. And I started to see these women who I could really relate to on so many levels, and they thought they were being vulnerable, and I could see, oh, that's not real vulnerability. And I'm like, oh shit, I do that. So I've learned a lot from my clients. That made me realize that, like, I think I'm open. I think my heart is open. I think I know what vulnerability is, but there's a deeper level here that I can see now that I'm not accessing. I really have to give that credit to my clients for modeling that for me.
I think that someone said to me that every coach is coaching themselves as well as their client.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's very true, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. But I think but on a more practical level too, or tactical level, I think kind of what you, just the observation that you made, like, oh, I was holding myself back. Just really, really, really taking responsibility for, like, okay, what am I doing here? How am I co-creating this relationship with another person? Because, you know, it's always a co-creation. Being like, oh, well, yeah, I have these triggers. When I feel a little bit vulnerable, I shut down, I start playing it cool, I'm aloof, I can, all of these things, like there's all of these defense mechanisms that I've developed over a lifetime, just kind of really calling myself out on it and saying like, I see what I'm doing. And in my relationship, I still have to do this occasionally. I mean, luckily we have great communication. So we've been able to like, he knows my pattern. He knows what I do, right? And I know what he does. By acknowledging that, we've been able to keep it in check because I'm like, oh, I'm getting defensive, you know? Right. Oh, I see what's happening, right? So, but just having that awareness, just sort of what you're always talking about, just feeling your feelings, like actually allowing yourself to be honest about an emotion that you're feeling, right? I'm feeling sad. I'm feeling not heard. I'm feeling whatever uncomfortable emotion. And rather than just defaulting to anger and defensiveness, but letting yourself sit there and be like, oh, this feels uncomfortable, but I'm going to breathe through it. And it's okay because this person across from me is somebody who, when I go deeper, he goes deeper. We can do this together. I think that was, just that process is, that's my process. Just, totally. Oh, this feels uncomfortable, but I'm going to be okay. I have to like talk myself through it.
Totally. And you do, don't you? You have to talk yourself through it. You have to kind of, because our ego will say to us, hey, just don't share that. Stay in your box. Stay safe. Don't let people really see you. You know, don't let them judge you. Just stay in this little safe container. And you have to go, actually, no, like, I don't want to just be safe. Safe doesn't inspire me. I want to be really seen. I want to let this person really see me. If she likes me, then amazing. Like, she'll see the real me and we can go to a deeper place. And if she doesn't, then I know she's not right for me. And I'm not going to take that rejection personally. You know, it's okay. At least I've given it a chance and I've shown up. That's a powerful place to live for me. You know, I lived in the opposite place. You know, I remember actually having a conversation myself before I got to my 20s, when I got dumped by a girl in the teen years, and literally saying to myself, that's not happening to me again. I'm not going to get rejected like that again. And that was part of me just closing up, putting a box around myself and staying safe. And, you know, staying safe doesn't equal living an inspired life for me. You know?
No, it sure doesn't.
Really be inspired. You've got to show up, and it's not safe. You might get rejected.
Absolutely. Well, you just confirmed something that I've long believed about men, which is that the first heartbreak that most men experience, that will just, for some men, that shuts their hearts forever. I think that, you know, you consciously said it to yourself, like, I'm never going to feel this way again. Yeah. But I think a lot of men say that to themselves, but they're not conscious of it, but their heart is forever closed a little bit from that first heartbreak. I think that's something that women don't understand about men. And, you know, not to be super heteronormative, but just because that's what you and I happen to be. Most women are socialized to think that men don't have feelings. So most women don't understand that a man who has had his heart broken is affected by that just as deeply as you are, and maybe even more so in some cases, because I think that women, in a way, we have a more of an emotional resiliency because we're allowed to experience different emotions. I don't know. I've always felt that women kind of bounce back from a heartbreak more easily than men.
For sure. I mean, you know, Brené Brown often talks about that. For men, the biggest no-no, the biggest trigger of shame is weakness. And getting rejected by a woman is a pretty big sign of, well, for us, is a big, quite a big representation of weakness, you know? And so that we will avoid that. And giving our hearts really opens the door to pretty brutal rejection. So whereas if we keep everything at arm's length and then it doesn't quite pan out, then it's like, well, you know, I wasn't really that bothered anyway, and kind of it's much safer space to live. You know, we will avoid weakness at all costs. Even what we do effectively is we avoid true fulfillment on the basis that we'd rather stay safe than give ourselves the opportunity of being seen as weak.
Exactly.
That's not a place I want to live in.
Yeah. Well, good for you, Ben. I'm so glad. That you are, you know, out there being so open and having this conversation, inspiring so many men and women. But this is a needed, your voice is a needed one in this culture, in this conversation. I will say, the last episode that I did is called Rejection Isn't Real, because that's my motto about rejection. I don't think it's real. I think that even though rejection is a feeling, and your feelings are valid, but your feelings aren't facts. And so when something doesn't work out, especially romantically, it's so easy to feel quote unquote rejected just because it didn't work out, just because that person wasn't interested. It doesn't, to call it rejection makes it about you being lacking in some way.
Yeah.
And that feels really bad. And so, I mean, this was my journey of like desensitizing myself to romantic rejection, because I used to be so petrified of it. And it really just stopped me from engaging for a really long time from that fear of being quote unquote rejected. But then once I was like, okay, what if I don't take this so personally? What if I just say, well, if that person isn't for me, then I guess there's just somebody else that is. So I'm not going to let that person's decision to not be with me derail me. And I'm not going to tell myself a story about me not being good enough in some way. I wish that I could send that message to the whole world, men and women, because, you know, we all have that tendency to feel rejected and to tell ourselves a story about rejection.
It's really important that when we are rejected in a relationship sense, that we have to see it. We have to understand it's not rejection. It's just an understanding that we're not compatible.
Yeah. Yes.
Because
yes.
You put your heart and soul out there, and it's not right for someone. That's not your fault at all.
Exactly. It's not your fault, and it's not your person.
No, it's not your person. You're lucky to find out. But you, mm-hmm. what you've got to do is show up and really let them see you, because there's nothing worse than getting rejected and they haven't ever really seen you. Because if they had have seen you, it might have worked out. And that's I'd much rather now it doesn't work out, because they really saw me and it wasn't right for me, like happened recently for me. And I took a lot of comfort from that. And I don't see it as rejection. I just see that I understood that she wasn't ready to go into that space. But what I don't want to do is just go through the motions and never really find out and not really feel like they ever got to know me. And for something that could have been beautiful to never have a chance to flourish, that for me is a waste.
Yes, that's such a waste. You're right. Mm. I love that. Keep saying that. Keep saying that to everyone.
And this is all vulnerability. People don't realize, but it's all, you've got to be vulnerable to enter this place.
Yeah, you sure do. I think vulnerability and self-love, those are two of the hardest things to work on, and those are two of the things that will save us all.
Definitely.
if we are able to develop that self-love and that ability to be vulnerable, I mean, it's just life-changing. So keep reminding myself of that and telling myself this as much as I'm telling anyone else.
Absolutely. Well, you're coaching yourself while you're saying it.
Yes, exactly. Oh my gosh. I'm like always having to coach myself. Don't you feel like you're coaching yourself all the time?
For sure. Yeah, I do. God, I don't mean this arrogantly at all. It's going to sound quite arrogant, I think. But, you know, I feel like I am showing up in my life. So I'm quite comfortable when I am coaching. I'm not perfect, and I fully own that. You know, I'm really not, and there's a lot to work on. There always will be. But I am showing up, and I'm doing my best, and I can't ask much more of myself than that. And I think that's our role as a coach. You know, if there's a part inside of you that knows that you're not really showing up and you're sharing these things and you're not really embracing it, then people can sense your inauthenticity.
Yes.
That doesn't quite add up. So I think
we
might not have nailed it, but we've got to try.
Yes.
As a coach. And
yep.
and own that we're not perfect. We haven't got it, mm-hmm. you know, and because there never will be all the answers. If we can live in that space, that's all we can really ask, I think.
Yeah,
we're human at the end of the day.
We sure are. There's my favorite quote about perfection is this is a Tony Robbins quote, and he said, "Perfection is the lowest standard you can hold for yourself because it's the only one that's impossible to achieve."
Nice. Yeah. Perfect. There you go.
And I love that. I like remind myself of that all the time. So aim higher. Don't aim for perfection, you know?
It's growth.
That is growth. Mm-hmm. So Ben, if you had, this is my last real question for you. If you had a megaphone, which you kind of do because you have a big platform, and you could send one message out to the world about love, what would that message be?
One message about love, it would be, if you really want to experience deep-rooted, like fulfilling, really connected love, and you've got to show up authentically and be vulnerable to let yourself be truly seen.
Yes.
And that's, if you can do that, then that's beautiful love. That's real love. It's not ticking boxes. That's the mecca.
Yes. Oh my God. Agreed. I love it. That is so beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that. I love that. And then could you just let our listeners know what you're working on, anything you want to share, how they can get in touch with you? I'm going to link to your blog and to your Instagram in the show notes. Oh, and to your podcast, the Naked Professors podcast. But if there's anything else that or anything you want to direct people's attention to, please do.
No, thank you. No, like I you've said it all, really, to be honest. I put everything on my Instagram, and our new series of our podcast is coming out soon. It's all about alpha men, so trying to mentor similar conversations to this, letting letting alpha men share from the heart and speak vulnerably.
And oh my God, I can't wait to hear that.
As possible. Yeah.
Yes.
And yeah, no, everything else I've kind of put through my Instagram, really. You said it all, I think.
Okay.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Ben. It's been so great talking to you. I really appreciate you.
No, it's my pleasure. Thank you. It's been a pleasure to speak with you. So thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to my conversation with Ben Bidwell. I hope that you enjoyed listening to it as much as I enjoyed having it. Please be sure to check the show notes for links to Ben's Instagram, The Naked Professor, as well as his Naked Professor blog and his Naked Professors, because there are two of them, podcast. So all those links will be in the show notes. I also invite you to stay in touch with me on social media. I am at Dear Franny. You can also stay in touch with the podcast at Dear Franny Podcast on both Instagram and Facebook. I would love to hear from you. For those of you who have taken the time to subscribe and to rate and review the show, thank you so much. I'm really, really grateful for that. I'm also very excited when I check the charts, which I did this morning, and I saw that we're still on the charts in Norway and Canada and Australia and the UK and Brazil and right here in the USA. So to everyone who's listening around the world, just know that I see you and I appreciate you. Thank you so much. Your time is precious, and I don't take for granted that you have spent a little bit of it listening to Dear Franny Podcast, so I'm super grateful for you. If you are enjoying the podcast and you haven't yet taken a moment to subscribe and to rate and review wherever you get your podcasts, I would be super, super grateful, even more grateful if you did. So thank you. Until next time, have a beautiful day wherever you are in the world. Goodbye.